and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. ANWA's long-speculated cabinet reshuffle has finally been unveiled, revealing a jumble of ministerial swaps and portfolio splits. Now, will this shake-up revitalise governance and restore confidence in the unity government? Joining me now is Aira Azhari. She's a senior manager of democracy and of the Democracy and Governance Unit for the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known by its acronym, Ideas Malaysia. Aira, good evening. Thank you for joining me on the show today. What are your initial thoughts about the cabinet reshuffle? What do you make of this new lineup?
So firstly, I think the most interesting appointment perhaps is the new second finance minister, who is not an MP. Datuk Sri Amir Hamzah was formerly with EPF. I think, you know, this appointment is both a way for the PM to evade any dissatisfaction amongst his unity government parties. Obviously, you know, the Minister of Finance is a big portfolio, and if he picks, you know, someone from the line of MPs in the government, that might stir some controversy. So I guess he has chosen the safer route and chosen someone from the outside. But having said that, you know, Dato' Sri Amir Hamzah was with EPF, a highly respected figure. So I think everyone is very hopeful that he will be able to steer the ministry in the right direction. Some of the criticism that the Prime Minister has received is also that he's not paying enough attention to his MOF role, right? He's also obviously has a very busy schedule. So I think we are all hoping for this the second finance minister to be able to carry out that role well. Since he is not from a political party, then it is hoped that he can focus on his job without, you know, being concerned about party but political matters, and some of the reforms and work that needs to be done can be expedited. So that's number one. Secondly, I think the breaking up of, I think, NREC, the NREC ministry, and also the communications and digital ministry was unexpected, I think. But considering especially how the communications and digital ministry, I think, has come under a lot of scrutiny before, I guess that is probably the right move on the PM side. There is concern, though, that now, you know, there are too many ministries, some are saying. But I guess with some big ministries, NREC is another huge one. It was three ministries before, and then it became one. And I think it is important that ministers can be more focused, I guess, in their jobs. The concern is, of course, with the civil service. I'm not sure how well or how fast the adjustment will be amongst the civil servants, and you can't really blame them. It is a big change, and Malaysians have very high expectations. So I don't think they can afford to be slow. However, we should also understand that these changes do take time. And, you know, if we want things to get done, we must also realize that not all of it can be done immediately. So, yeah, that's just maybe my initial thought.
Yeah, so Aira, can I just ask you from a governance perspective? You know, I think you and I, we've been kind of waiting on this cabinet reshuffle for quite a long time now. We've been it's been 4 months since we had a cabinet seat that was vacant, and there's been rumors in between of a cabinet reshuffle every now and then resurfacing. But when you think about why an administration or a prime minister reshuffles the cabinet, what does this lineup indicate to you in terms of how ANWA is thinking about the governance of this Madani government? What is he trying to achieve here? Instead of just filling in a vacant cabinet seat, he's made some moves. I think 13 individuals were affected in this lineup. What does that speak to you about why ANWA made so many ministerial swaps, and whether we may see more of this during the tenure of the Madani government?
Yeah, so I can't say that this reshuffle was expected. I think, firstly, the vacant position of the domestic trade minister was expected to be filled much earlier, right? So the late minister passed, I think, in May, and it is now December. So, and we've I think that was the impetus for the rumors of the reshuffle in the first place, I think. So I mean, no one knows whether this reshuffle was actually planned or was it sort of in response to the sort of sequence of events after the late minister passed. So yeah, and the other thing as well is I think what the Prime Minister has done is I think try to sort of respond to some members of the public and also the opposition who have actually been saying that many of his ministers are not performing, and also the pace of reforms have been too slow, and some reforms have not moved at all, right? So, for example, the abolition of the Sedition Act, the separation of the AG and the public prosecutor, and all that has been quite slow. So I think it is a combination of several things. Even if he didn't do this reshuffling, I think, firstly, the domestic trade minister should have been replaced a long time ago. We all know that domestic trade ministry is also the cost of living ministry, and cost of living is constantly at the top of all the concern for all for Malaysians across all races, all religions, across all demographics, socioeconomic backgrounds. So I would like to know why that appointment wasn't made earlier, firstly. And yeah, and secondly, I think... I think he now then needs to balance between responding to the public's criticism, which I think some of it has been brought upon because, he has actually sort of planted the idea that he's going to do a reshuffle in the public's mind because he keeps responding to it when the media asks, right? But then, he can't also sort of just sack ministers. That's also very, very difficult to do. In balancing this precarious unity government that he has. So I think he's trying to do several things here, which I think is, it is a bit perplexing in some sense.
All right. Are you, looking at this lineup, do you see the potential to rebuild that public confidence that you were referring to?
Yes, I think there is potential for that, especially, again, with the second finance minister appointment. A lot of the complaints, I think, that we've been hearing from the business community, especially, is that things in the Ministry of Finance are not moving fast enough. So I hope that with Dato' Sri Amir Hamzah's appointment, these issues will be resolved pretty quickly. As for the others, the domestic trade minister, Dato' Sri Armizan has been the one who has sort of like, taken up the role anyway since the late minister passed. So hopefully he can just sort of like, hit the ground running and address some of the very difficult issues that his ministry needs to take on. And for the rest, I hopefully with the sort of shrinking or sort of splitting of several ministries, that will help to focus more. For institutional reforms, Dato' Sri Azalina is still there, which I think is a good thing because she has kicked off some reforms, under her administration so far. So I'm quite positive that she's continuing. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me on the show, Ira. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad returns as Health Minister in the Cabinet reshuffle today, replacing Dr. Zaliha Mustafa, who was appointed Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of Federal Territories. So Dr. Zul was previously Health Minister in Dr. Mahathir's Cabinet from 2018 to 2020. So joining us on the show now to discuss this further is Azrul Muhammad Khalib. He is the CEO of the Gallen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Azrul, good evening. Thank you for being on the show with me tonight. How are you reading Dr. Zul's return as Health Minister, particularly bearing in mind that initially there was some reluctance on his part to even run as a candidate in GE15, and now he's back serving in the highest position in the Ministry of Health. So what's your read of him coming back to this position?
Well, Melissa, you know, it brings to mind that scene from Terminator 2 where Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator says, "I'll be back," you know, and Dr. Zulkifli is back as the Health Minister, and just like the Terminator has a lot of obstacles, challenges needing to face, and this time it seems like the theme hitting the ground running is going to be what he's going to have to adopt, because he will also face a steep learning curve. There's a lot of issues here. This time around, as compared to back in 2018, there will be less patience, very little sympathy, and much cynicism for many of the health stakeholders. The health minister is going to have to act quickly to rebuild confidence, build alliances, and regain trust, especially since there are a lot of reforms being proposed, and he himself has his own ideas of what he would like to introduce. And the health challenges that Malaysia faces have grown increasingly larger, and in some situations worsened, and have grown grim over the past year. He's going to have to manage also a large amount of expectations, some of which are going to be unrealistic. And I really don't envy what he's going to have to face. But I think he's the right guy who's coming in to address many of these concerns. But, you know, we will have to see and reflect 1 year from now whether or not he's going to be able to meet some of those expectations.
So during the revealing of this new cabinet lineup, Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim responded to a question about why he was bringing Dr. Zul back as Health Minister. He said, "Experience is needed," if I may quote him. Azra, can I get your thoughts on that? Why? Why is experience needed in this portfolio? Why is healthcare different than other portfolios held by first-time ministers?
Well, it's good that the Prime Minister recognised the need for experience, expertise, and also the ability to prioritize for this very large and very significant portfolio. I mean, a lot of people forget that health actually takes up the second largest amount for the federal budget. And essentially, the health minister is the chief executive officer of a very large organization and includes buildings, includes people, services, and everything that comes down to running such a business. So for other ministries, it may not be as much or as of that scale. So it's good that the Prime Minister recognises that he needs to ensure the right person is with the necessary experience and expertise. And Dr. Zul definitely has some of that. But I have to say, though, that we are hoping for the Health Minister to triage and prioritise quite a number of issues that are quite pressing to the healthcare service right now, and one of which is really to follow up on the recruitment and retention of healthcare workers, especially doctors and nurses in the public service. You know, Melissa, we are hemorrhaging staff by the week. They are demoralized and needing support. You know, even the good staff, like, you know, the contract doctors being appointed to permanent positions, has turned bitter and has become something negative, because it's been handled in such a manner in which instead of actually encouraging them to stay in the service, they are actually leaving. The fact is just before this reshuffle, it was revealed that 10% of those offered permanent positions resigned rather than accept the offer due to the requirement for them to drop everything and move to another location far from the existing posting. And most recently was revealed that the BSM, the bahagian sumber manusia. It also requires them to resign their existing contracts before they can take on those permanent positions. So there's a lot of issues here that are relating to human resource that needs to be managed, needs someone who's able to see the not just the small print, but also the bigger picture. And for this, experience is very much needed.
Right. You mentioned earlier that Dr. Zoll is stepping back into this role, but he's doing so with extremely high expectations, almost, you know, bordering unrealistic expectations. You said stakeholders and the public will have very little patience for any mistakes, very little sympathy, and cynicism, I think was the word that you used a little bit earlier.
Indeed.
So how do we think about that, bearing in mind what his past tenure was like, the things that he achieved in his previous tenure, and also the tenure of the previous health minister, Dr. Zaliha? How do we learn from Dr. Zaliha's 1 year in office and what Dr. Zoll brings to this role to forecast or even foresee what he might do to live up to these really, really high expectations? What are you hoping he will prioritise and focus on?
Well, first and foremost, Melissa, Dr. Zoll, as the health minister, needs to surround himself with the right people, with the necessary expertise and experience to guide the decisions and actions that he needs to undertake. He should not and must not think that this is his sole burden to bear. He needs to seek support and collaborate with the private sector so that these issues can be worked on together rather than in competition or at cross purposes. And it's important for him to work, to put together and assemble perhaps an immediate task force to see what are the issues that need to be prioritized, need to be dealt with in the first 100 days of him taking on this portfolio. But even now, I can already say to you some of the things that he needs to consider and to look at. You know, for example, the control of smoking products for Public Health Bill 2023, which needs to be shepherded through Parliament until it passes the Dewan Negara, signed by the King and gazetted into the statute books, and hence become law. Nothing should be taken for granted. Anything could happen to stall the progress of this bill. And somehow, this past year has seen the government becoming labelled as being pro-tobacco and pro-vape industry, with many compromises and erosions of Malaysia's obligations under the World Health Organization's Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. The incoming minister, Dr. Zoll, needs to immediately act to repair the damage to Malaysia's reputation. And let's not forget that the health minister inherits from his predecessor an unprecedented lawsuit from health NGOs due to the previous decision to remove nicotine used for vape and e-cigarettes from the scheduled poisons list. So there's a lot of issues here that he needs to be able to deal with, but there's the short term and long term, and he needs to be able to distinguish between the two. Having said that though, Melissa, the thing that he needs to be put into his in-tray for immediate implementation is to improve on the communications. It needs to communicate its work more effectively and ensure involvement of all stakeholders in the planning of programs and evaluation outcomes. I cannot stress enough, in the previous government and his predecessor as well, communication has been one of the weak points and the gaps in terms of the ability to get people to understand what has been done. So, you know, Dr. Zoll has a lot on his plate, but he needs to take a deliberate, consultative and inclusive approach in dealing with these issues to make sure that people and patients are placed at the centre and beneficiaries of policies and not just being the target of them.
Azro, thank you. Always appreciate your insights. Azro Muhammad Khalid from Galen Centre there. We're going to take another very quick break on Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Melissa Idris. Thanks so much for staying with me on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about the cabinet reshuffle. We speak now to political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, hello. Let's talk a little bit about what this cabinet reshuffle looks like from a political standpoint. I'm just wondering what you think are some of the strategic considerations or motives that might underlie Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim's decision to reshuffle this cabinet at this particular juncture, beyond just filling the vacant cabinet seat?
So I think about this reshuffle as one that is like a plug-in, you know, an add-on, you know, a slight upgrade from the cabinet. We have increased gravitas. We have the bringing in a technocrat into the as Minister of Finance too. We have a little bit more people with economic experience as well as experience in governance, including in some of the deputy minister positions. We see a situation where I think this will strengthen, but it's also not necessarily new ideas, and we'll come to that later. But from a perspective of the engagement politically, what you can see is that parties are engaging in terms of there's more consolidation from the perspective of the different coalition partners. So DAP has been given some key positions. We see a situation where in Sarawak, PBB is given a key position. So I think this has actually strengthened the alliance relationships.
Okay, let's focus on the those individual political parties within the coalition. Let's look at UMNO. The moves by the UMNO ministers, Mat Hassan being reassigned as foreign minister, replacing Zamri Kadir taking over for higher education. Those types of moves, Jogani being now made the plantations and commodities minister. When you look at the way these ministers were reshuffled, deputy ministers were reshuffled, and Jogani being brought in, what does that tell you about UMNO's dynamics within this coalition?
I think of all those things that you spoke about, the inclusion of Jogani is the most important from the perspective of bringing more people from a political perspective, more people from the base of the party that were more resistant to working in the unity government. So this actually, and he comes with a fair amount of experience. So I think this also brings capacity, but also strengthens the UMNO cohort within the cabinet as a whole. I would say, you know, that the musical chairs of the different ministers, let's see. I think I'm not sure that this will necessarily improve governance in these particular ministries, perhaps with the exception of higher education, where that minister would now have more experience, having worked in higher education. But we'll see how this works. I think Mat Hassan also is very strong in foreign affairs. He's well spoken. So I think that this is actually, from a political perspective as well as a policy perspective, has some positives.
What did you mean then when you said no new ideas? Was that what you were referring to, the fact that we're seeing just kind of musical chairs in the cabinet?
Well, as I said, a plug-in, right? We bring in people, some people from outside and others. I think, you know, with the exception of the technocrat, you know, Tan Sri Amir Hamza, who I think hopefully will be able to strengthen the economic policies and the economic direction, provide more confidence to the business community. But there is a sense that you know, you're bringing people with experience, but not necessarily new policy ideas. So when I think about this, this is a plug-in reshuffle, but not necessarily a reboot for the government. And, you know, for example, moving Gobind Singh into a digital in terms of the new split ministry, I think we have a situation where, you know, communications were a problem in the first Pakatan Harapan government, and their problem now in this Pakatan prime minister-led government, although a unity government, and it's a problem for communication. So I don't see how this is going to reboot the engagement. And it's also not clear what are the specific policy plans and directions. So I think that, you know, the cabinet as a whole has worked well together. I think the people that have brought in are actually team players, people with experience. But the key issue is that Anwar has overshadowed the cabinet. And how will this change? And how will there be a plan to focus on what Malaysians need in terms of key policies for reform as well as strengthen the economy?
Can I ask you specifically about the finance portfolio? Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim has not relinquished his dual role as Prime Minister and Finance Minister, but made a slew of changes, as you mentioned, bringing in former EPF CEO Amir Hamza. We also have the appointment of Lim Hui Ying as Deputy Finance Minister, which brings the Lim family back into the finance portfolio. Typically, we see the SecGen of DAP usually holding that highest ranking portfolio in a cabinet. So what do you make of this? The inclusion of the chairperson's family member, how could that affect internal party dynamics and also coalition dynamics?
Well, I think, there's no question that the Lim family still plays a major role within the DAP. And in terms of accommodating the DAP more into the cabinet than compared to previously, we see they've received a number of positions. And one of those, obviously, is the sole deputy in finance. Previously there were two deputies. And I think that UMNO has been removed from the finance ministry. I think my concern is that Lim Hui Ying has no experience in this particular sector. she doesn't bring to the ministry any specific knowledge about the economy. This is not her expertise. And I think given the circumstances of what's happening from the perspective of the economic conditions, that this is not the best position. But it's a political choice. It's a choice of basically making sure that the different factions of the DAP are being accommodated within the government. And that part of that is the Lim family. And this is where she's been positioned.
Bridget, thank you so much for speaking with me. That was political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.